Hello and welcome to Swiss Info's program for October the 11th. I'm Scott Kappa. Coming up, a major project to probe the human brain gets underway in Lausanne, and we find out why Switzerland is not relevant when it comes to social media. But first, the past week has seen various Nobel Prizes being awarded. Among those was the Physics Prize, which was given to the British researcher Peter Higgs and Belgian François Englert for their theory of how particles acquire mass, a theory they proposed independently of each other nearly 50 years ago, along with Englert's deceased colleague Robert Brout. Their theory notably postulated the existence of a particle now known as the Higgs boson. Its existence was confirmed last year by the CERN Laboratory for Particle Physics on the outskirts of Geneva, using the massive Large Hadron Collider, perhaps the most complex machine ever built. Two research groups of some 3,000 scientists each, ATLAS and CMS, were to extract the Higgs particle from billions of particle collisions in the collider. Roland Horisberger of the Paul Scherrer Institute is one of those scientists. He was the leader of the group that built the so-called pixel detector that tracks the path followed by the particles in the CERN collider. I began by asking him what his reaction was to the Nobel Prize announcement.
I was actually very happy. And I was happy that it was possible with this somewhat complicated rules about the Nobel Prize, which does not allow it to give it to institutions, nor does it allow to give it to a larger group of contributing theorists, that this prize was awarded to two figures which we all consider to be kind of like representative symbolic figures. Peter Higgs and François Englert, and Brout is now unfortunately dead. One must keep in mind, you know, there have been a number of other theories, because at the time when they wrote their papers in 1964 or 5, that was not the full theory yet at that point. You know, it needed still major parts of it, and they were done by other people later on, so even the theory work was not a single person's work. No doubt that the two which were now rewarded kind of created the starting stones and put the whole process into going by having contributed in kind of a major new mental or theoretical direction.
Do you see this prize, however, as the validation for all the work that's been carried out at CERN by the thousands of scientists there and other laboratories around the world?
Yes, absolutely. I see it also as a prize for the field. You must see compared to other science fields, high energy physics, this particle physics has to kind of team up a lot of resources internationally to make progress. I think the result itself, the fact that we have now found nature follows, is what I would call crazy mathematics of Higgs. That this I find the most astonishing. So it looks to me, it is for me really a major step in our understanding of basic fundamental behavior of nature.
With this discovery of the Higgs boson, or at least the confirmation of its existence, some people have said physics as we know it has reached an endpoint. How true is this as far as you are concerned?
No, I would seriously doubt, of course, that idea that we would have reached an endpoint. The Higgs was missing, yes. The Higgs was, by the way, you know, the Higgs mechanism, the Higgs mathematics, you should call it the Higgs mathematics, is fixing many, or is complete, is like a completing stone in a cathedral construction, and it's solving many problems at once. It's a most ingenious mechanism, and in its most simplest form is what we now call the Higgs boson, the simplest one. Let's keep in mind as a historical comparison that, for instance, in 1500, the so-called epicycle theory of the movements of the planets agreed remarkably well with the observed data already at the time, so people could predict where Mars would be 3 years and 2 months and 2 days later, and it would be there indeed. And there were tiny kind of deviations. These deviations were taken seriously and eventually led Kepler to the formulation of new laws of celestial mechanics. And it could well be that by studying the Higgs more precise, maybe we find in future clues how this theory has to be enlarged. But at the moment, I think we can say, yes, it's wonderful. We have put in a cornerstone in this whole theory building, but we understand that this kind of building has to be enlarged because there are parts not described which we know will have to be inscribed.
Roland Harrisberger of the Paul Scherrer Institute speaking there. In more science news this week, the Human Brain Project, or HBP, kicked off at Lausanne's Federal Institute of Technology. The goal of the neuroscience project is to foster a deeper understanding of how the brain works. In January, the European Union selected the project for one of its flagship grants, worth more than 1 billion euros. The HBP's total budget is an estimated 1.2 billion euros. Over the next 30 months, scientists from all over Europe will set up and test research platforms covering subjects such as brain simulation, high-performance computing, and neurorobotics. In 2016, these platforms will be ready for use by researchers all over the world. Swiss Info correspondent Simon Bradley caught up with project leader Henry Markram in Lausanne. He began by asking him what the ultimate goal of the HBP was.
Today we begin a journey to unify our understanding of the brain. It's a very exciting journey. It's a very difficult journey. It is one that will require hundreds and if not thousands of scientists over the course of the next 10 years. But it's a very important journey. We believe that it will provide a foundation for us to understand mental health, brain diseases, and ultimately who we are as humans.
Why is it so difficult to understand the human brain?
The human brain is an organ. It is an organ that has a finite number of cells and proteins and genes. It's got a very large number of them, but it's got a finite number. The difficulty has come because there are so many different disciplines and different ways that you can research the brain. And the difficulty has come that it's produced so much data and so much knowledge, but in an isolated way, in a fragmented way. We've come with a solution where we say that what we need is an integration plan. We need a plan to put the pieces together in a unified view. It's like building a puzzle from the billions of pieces that are out there and putting it together and actually filling in the gap.
Some of the criticism I've seen of the project is that it's too complex, it's too open-ended.
You know, I mean, I don't understand what it means it's too complex. It's big, but it's not complex in that sense. There's a neuron, we have to understand neurons, where there's synapses, there's non-neuronal tissue, and there's blood. And then there's the way that they connect it together. When somebody says it's too complex, they actually don't know on what basis they're saying it's too complex. What we know today is that there's actually too much data. There is too much data out there, and we don't know how to put it together. We have to begin to see how do we put the data together. And we will work out, as we do that, how we can predict missing parts of the data. What we do agree is that we're missing a lot of data. But what we have calculated is that we're not going to get that missing data just from experiments. We need a new plan of what we call predictive brain research. For example, to measure all the connections in the brain, there are 1,000 trillion synapses in the brain. We are not going to be able to experimentally map every one of them. But what we can do is we can use principles about how neurons are connected, and we can build them into algorithms, and then we can make a predicted model of a brain, and then we can check the connections. So actually most of the connections in the brain we will predict, and only we will check a few of them with experiments.
Markram says the project will also provide tools to deal with looming health issues.
What I see in the next decades is that society as a whole, worldwide, we're facing an enormous challenge of overpopulation, of increasing aging, and we are not ready. We are not ready because with that will come a lot of new stressors on society. And today we have no systematic foundation for addressing mental health and brain diseases. We believe this will provide us a very concrete foundation to understand the brain from genes to cognition and behavior, and to understand all the ways that the brain can break down to give you different diseases.
And that was Henry Markram of Lausanne's Federal Institute of Technology. Turning now to social media, the Twitter platform has been in the news for all kinds of reasons over the past few weeks. It recently announced it was going public in the next few months, giving investors a chance to get their hands on what promises to be a hot property. But Twitter is also making waves because of some of the conversations taking place. Most recently, the exchange between President Obama and the Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. All the more extraordinary given the lack of diplomatic dialogue between the two countries for the past 30 years. So is Twitter now the platform of choice for the world's leaders and diplomats? Not for the Swiss so far, according to Matthias Lufkens of public relations firm Börsen Marsteller and one of the authors of the annual Twiplomacy report.
Well, Switzerland is almost absent because the president the current president or the foreign minister are not currently on Twitter, neither with personal accounts nor institutional accounts, and so that is a bit disappointing. There is, of course, the Andrei Simonazzi, the spokesperson of the Federal Council, has a Twitter account, and he basically relays the message of the government.
How do you explain this relative lack of interest in tools such as Twitter?
I think it's in the German-speaking part of Europe. Germany is the same. It's the spokesperson of the government who is tweeting. The Angela Merkel herself is not on Twitter. She's the only G8 leader who doesn't have a personal Twitter account. The government doesn't have an official Twitter account apart from the spokesperson account. I think it has to do something with that Twitter is currently not really widely used by the population, and politicians only look at Twitter to reach their internal audiences. But Twitter is actually very, very useful to reach a global audience, and there you have over 200 million registered users on Twitter, and really to reach these people, you have to probably tweet even in English to be part of this conversation. I mean, we've seen over the past weeks amazing Twitter exchanges between the new Iranian president Hassan Rouhani and the U.S. Administration. Twitter is really a tool that helps you promote a country and being part of this diplomatic exchanges on Twitter. So I think in that way, the Swiss government hasn't really used it yet.
Would you say this is because they're not aware of the potential, or could we also put this down perhaps to something of the Swiss idea of modesty, of not trying to stand out too much, being very discreet?
Maybe that could be a reason. But then, you know, look at Norway's diplomacy is the same, very much under the radar, very, very effective. But still, in Norway, the government has embraced Twitter, and also the foreign ministry is very active. So I think I really would put it down to that Twitter is not used in Switzerland, so they don't yet see the use of having a Twitter account. And then the question is, in which language do you tweet? Do you tweet in German, in French, in Italian, even in Romansh? That is really just looking at the home audience. Or, you know, do you go and tweet in English for a global audience? So I think these are all thoughts that the government should really look at. You know, how do we do this?
Matthias Lufkens of the public relations firm Börsen Marsteller speaking there. And that's all we have time for this week. Thanks for listening. Visit us at swissinfo.ch or Swissinfo on Twitter and Facebook for more on these and other stories. I'm Scott Kapper.